Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're dealing a little bit, around, some of the scams that happen in and around the tech and online space. We've spoken quite a lot on this platform around issues of digital privacy, cybersecurity, and all of these things. But, for today, we're going to be focusing on the story of someone who actually managed to defraud a number of people out of millions of dollars. We're not talking millions of rands, we're talking millions of dollars. So that's what we're going to be talking about for today. And on the line, we're joined by Stephen Tim, who is joining us from Cape Town. He is a journalist and the former editor of Venture Burn, which is an online publication covering Africa's tech startup sector. And the book that he's written is called At Any Cost, and actually details the fraud saga of South African tech entrepreneur Aaron Isle, who involving Springleap, which was a crowd sourcing platform for market experts and designers, and Shopping, which was a retail app that was used to actually raise $42.5 million in an initial coin offering back in 2018. The man was actually convicted for fraud on both companies by a New York court in December 2019. So we're going to be talking about this fascinating story. So, Stephen, good morning to you.
Morning, Maria. Thanks for having me here.
And thank you so much for being with us. I think a good place for me to maybe get some clarity in the beginning is, in terms of the name, how do you pronounce his full name?
Iran, I think that's how he says it. Iran.
Iran. And, on your end, how did you happen upon this particular story? Were you the editor at Venture Burn at the time? Was this something that you were following? Maybe you could take us through your interest in the story and why it stuck out to you.
Yeah, okay, sure. I was the editor of Venture Burn at the time. And, I just got a call from the publisher at that time, saying, you better check the news feeds here. He's just been arrested. And that was in August 2018. And I said, well, I've actually met Aram back in 2010. And he struck me as a charming person, very gentle, very intelligent. And I thought, this can't be the same person. There must be something here that's not right. So I thought, I started covering the story, and it just became really fascinating. I think I ended up writing about 25 stories on this whole thing. It just kind of epitomized, the side that people don't talk about in the tech sector. And this is not just in South Africa, this is worldwide. This book, Bad Blood, dealt with it quite a bit. The fake it till you make it syndrome, where basically people and technology, online technology, it's easy to do that kind of thing because people can't exactly see it. It's not very tangible. and you're talking about something that still has to be developed. But you can make, you're telling investors they can make millions of dollars off this, once it actually launches. So it's easy to hoodwink people. And this is what he did. He actually he lied about all parts of his company. And he did it very convincingly. And that kind of thing, I've seen it happening in other companies too. It's just that there weren't court cases and that on the go. So that's kind of what drew me into the whole case, is this whole, this kind of the lying that goes on in the tech sector. I kind of wanted to, kind of delve into that because no one talks about it. It's like the tech sector is run by a massive PR machine. And the only thing you hear about it is like, these are the companies of the future. They're small startups. Yeah, you don't hear about this, the lies and so forth. And I kind of wanted to, this is what the Aram Isle story was really touching on.
Perhaps for the benefit of our listeners, because it is quite cool that you decided that, okay, fine, let's shed some light on this otherwise unspoken you know, part of the tech industry. The actual scam itself, right? What was it? What was he promising? What did he say he was going to do, and what actually ended up happening?
Oh, okay. Well, there were pretty much two scams. The one was Springleap, and then he, after that, he raised, you know, $42.5 million through an ICO, initial coin offering, which is like a, it's like an IPO, but on with cryptocurrency. Now the first one, he basically, he just lied about everything. He would, in one thing, he actually told, he'd go to investors and he'd tell them, you know, this person invested in the company. Like, I think it was the one example that was like, Facebook's number six employee, Nicholas Hyman, I think it was. Except this guy never invested anything in the company at all, 100K. He said, oh, this guy's put in $100,000. Then basically all that happened there is the guy said, oh, I will. Because he'd always lie so that he could always later say, oh, you know, the guy sent me an email saying he would invest, but he's just considering things. So it's kind of like he can always go back and say, oh, I made a sort of a assumption wrong, whatever. Except these were put on pitch decks. And he put on the pitch deck certain clients that, you know, Springleap was doing business with, but he never did business with these companies. The most audacious one where he got a Bulgarian guy to web scrape like over 150,000 clients. So basically Springleap was crowdsourcing from the internet designers and market experts that could, instead of using an advertising firm, you just go to, you know, like this kind of Facebook type of thing, and you'd get someone for cheaper like that. Now, except he only had apparently only a few thousand ever that he'd ever signed up himself, that Springleap had signed up himself. Then in the beginning, they were already dragging it out to, oh, we had 18,000 designers and experts of that. In the end, he got this guy to web scrape, you know, off one company's website, or Fiverr, that freelance website, something like over 150,000 profiles. So in the end, he came to about 180,000 was the figure. And I mean, there are so many other small things where he lied about things in his company to, you know, things like, I don't know, like he had a co-founder, and this guy, he never mentioned that he had a co-founder. And he also never mentioned that the company was actually founded like something like in 2007 or something like 2007 or 2008, but it was re-registered as another entity in something like in 2012. So he used that date. So, you know, he never, it used to be a t-shirt, it used to sell t-shirts. And effectively it was a knockoff threadless.com, which basically sells t-shirts that designers make over the internet. Springleap copied that idea. the one co-founder even says, yeah, we copied it. And then he went in after that, after Springleap, you know, Shopin was the other one that he ran. And that whole thing was based on the fact that they'd done two pilot projects with Emilio, Zegna, and Bed Bath & Beyond. It turned out that these projects had never been done. There was no proof. These retailers in the US said they didn't have proof of it. So it's like that. And then he also used on his pitch decks, because the whole thing in startups is you pitch and you have people's names on there that are in your team. So he'd say this person's in the team, but actually they left like a few weeks before. But he'd keep them on the pitch deck, an investor or like someone in his team. Or, you know, these people, just because they were they worked for certain companies, he needed their association with those brands to get to impress investors. So it's a whole lot of small lies that came together in both of these schemes. And I mean, yeah, Shopin never, they were going to develop this app that was going to transform the retail sector. Like, instead of, you know, retailers wouldn't have to use Amazon anymore. They could use this app that would like help shoppers to, it would show shoppers stuff that they wanted to, you know, they wanted to buy rather than like send spam emails to them or SMSs that they weren't going to really pay attention to.
So can I confirm that all of these crimes happened in the United States, and that all of the convictions happened in the United States? Because I'm trying to also draw some type of timeline around when Aaron actually left South Africa to actually go to the United States, and perhaps where is he now?
Yeah, okay. He basically left to go to the to New York. It was always his dream to go to New York in about 2013, 2014. And then he started scamming people there, well, investors, to get money for Spring Week. Between 2014, the investigations were between 2014 and I think the end of 2015, because Spring Week folded, I think, was February or something like that, February 2016, the beginning of 2016. And then after that, he ran shopping from 2017 to the end of December 2019, when, you know, he was convicted, and then basically the company folded.
So was he convicted on both accounts?
Yeah, he was. First investigation was just into Springleaf, because four investors from the US took him on. He got investment from an Australian people, a guy in the UK, some in South Africa. So South Africans are, you know, if he comes back to South Africa, they want to sue him. There are investors that want to go after him. And yeah, so it started off with just four investors from the US taking him to New York Attorney General's office. They began investigating. When he went to court, when he started going to court at the beginning of 2019, then the investigators got wind, the New York Attorney General's office got wind that he was actually doing the same stuff at Shopin. An employee there informed on them on Iran that, look, he's actually doing the same stuff at Shopin. And then they began investigating Shopin as well. So, and then also the SEC opened a case on Shopin, a civil claims case later. But you know, the outcome of this whole thing is quite a weird way that justice works there. I mean, they whatever money that he left, in the end, he only had $465,000 of ether left in the wallets that he was for the ICO that he raised, down from $42.5 million. Most of that was the volatility of ether that just, you know, fallen, rather than money that he'd like used on the project or had squandered himself. Now that money was used to pay back the Springleaf investors. So the joke is, you know, he used the proceeds from one scam to pay back that from another scam. I mean,
you know, perhaps we could also benefit because if I'm correct, earlier on you did say that this is someone that you had met at some point.
Yeah, again, I met him. He didn't want to cooperate in the book.
Because the question I was going to ask is, you know, given this crazy story that you've given us, you've got a South African who leaves, goes, you know, it's always been his dream to go to New York, goes to New York, and somehow, you know, within 2 years of being in the U.S., he's already finding ways of defrauding investors and misrepresenting his company and, you know, making it seem as if he's got big wigs and big names behind whatever that he's doing, misrepresenting pitch decks, all of this stuff. So from your point of view, as someone who's first met him but also just engaging and doing your research around the book, what is it about him, right, that actually drew people in? Because he must have been doing something right to actually convince people, because it's one thing to say something and quite another to be believed when you say that thing. Like, there's something there. Like, he was doing, whether we like it or not, he was doing something right that, you know, caused people to hand over whatever money that they did give over to him.
Yeah, I mean, he was very he was just very believable, I think. he used to write pitch decks for other companies, so he knew exactly what to say and how to say it, how to butter someone up, sweet talk them. I spoke to some guy after that, a school friend that I'd been trying to get hold of, and he said even when he was at at the synagogue on when he went there on Saturday, he'd always try and run, he'd like go for the guys who like had all the money and stuff and hang out with them. He was always trying to be an impressionable person, and he's very small in stature. He looks very like not a person that would he doesn't look like someone who's going to con you. He looks very, I think that's kind of what also made people, fall for him. He looked very fragile. He knew what he was talking about. It's just that he bent things because he knew that it was going to take too long to do things a legitimate way to build a company. So rather, he's just going to that's what they call fake it till you make it. Just a few little lies, and in the end, you deliver the product. Except, Spring Leap was never really making a profit. He lied about how much money that was making as well to investors. And most of the money was coming from the South African office when, he was touting it as an international company by 2014. So, yeah. I mean, he'd been described by some people as a fantasist. So he'd talk to people, and some people would think, no, that's rubbish what you're saying. But it says a lot for the investment, for investors too, that they kind of, and not just them, everyone sort of believed what he had to say. And I think that this book is also a manual on how you can actually, how easy it is actually to cheat people in the tech sector, because a lot of it relies on name dropping. And also, like, once you read this, you kind of see how shallow the tech sector can also be, because people don't really go in, they're very time conscious, so they don't have time to go into things very quickly. So you just have to name check a couple of big people, big brand names, and then they don't even think any further whether this product actually works. They're just handing out the money already. That's kind of, it's a sad way, but that's how this tech sector works. Big brand, big names, and he worked it out. That is how clever he is. He worked out that this is how you actually get to the top. You just, it's marketing. you're like 90% hot air, 10% actual product. He was doing something. There was an office at Springleaf. They were churning out things. It wasn't like there wasn't any people there. But it was like saying you are the, I mean, in one thing he said that he was the seventh most innovative company in the world or something. It turned out that magazine that he'd said that he was like the seventh most innovative company in the world, they had like a South African edition. So he was actually the seventh most innovative in South Africa. And then they had the international ones. The 20 ones in front of were like the US ones or the international ones. So he actually left that out completely. Now, you see what I mean? Someone later could say, hey, didn't you? And he was like, yeah, I meant the seventh most innovative in South Africa. Oh, sorry, it was a typo. And people don't, if you do enough of these, you just build up that you're like this really cool company. But you just built on a whole lot of like millions of myths. And he multiplied that enough. That just word got out that this is a cool company, and no one questioned it, because the media in the tech sector also, they don't really do their work. So I came in and did this book also as a show up to like the media really has, and also the general media has to actually really get to grips more about what is going on, and not the technology. What is going on in the business? Those are the questions that should be asked, because they baffle you with oh, AI and this and that and fancy terms, when actually really what you want to know is the revenue, the new customers. And when you ask those kind of questions, then you actually start understanding whether this business is going anywhere.
I have to say that, you know, on that last point, I completely agree with you, because for the Business Day and Financial Mail, I cover technology, media and telecoms companies, and I deal a lot with listed companies. And I think that's a bit easier to do because they have that obligation to share actual business and, you know, financial considerations and information. But it's always in the murky space of private companies where, you know, especially international companies, I have a big gripe with the large tech companies, you know, that make it seem as if they're floating on a cloud in South Africa. You know, they don't want to tell you, you know, how many people they have, how much money they're making, how much money they're actually investing in the local market. But at the same time, the same could be said about startups as well, because, you know, you sort of make it seem as if the information about your revenues, etc., is going to impede your competitiveness in some way, right? That, you know, if we let you publish or tell you how much money we're making, we're going to give a leg up to our competitors, or, you know, we're under some, you know, embargo. We can't tell you, you know, how much we're making on XYZ. So it's always been a bit of a gripe for me. So I completely understand, you know, where you're coming from on that end. So as we end off, maybe, you know, I don't know what we can call it, a word of caution, or, you know, just on the whole, when we're looking at the bigger picture, right? Because you did start off saying that your impetus for even writing the book was to put, you know, to shine this light on what's actually going on. You know, how big of an issue is this, right? Because just listening to you, it really does sound as if a lot of companies' reputations, or cool companies, as we call them, are really being built off of, you know, PR more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a big degree of companies that are actually, I wouldn't say they, I mean, this is what Iran was doing was fraud, you know, outright lies. But there are some where you could say, oh, that's a white lie, where you're just saying, you fudge it slightly, your what the company's about, the image of the company. Now, that's going on at least 50% of the time, if not more. But the actual ones that are fraudulent, I wouldn't be surprised if there are quite a few technology companies out there. And they also hide behind this whole thing. Like, if you're the media and you try to ask any critical questions, they're like, oh, come on, man, it's a startup. Come on. They hide behind this whole thing where their argument is, we need to create jobs in this country, so you need to report positively. You can't criticize like that. You bat it down. Whereas actually, you know, your questions are relevant because that company is making millions. It's not like a spaza shop or some auto dealer or some small business that is struggling or something. It is actually, you know, they've got 10 employees, but they're making gazillions because they don't need a lot of people. So, you know, it looks like they're small, but they're actually making a lot of money. So I think people need to actually be really critical of these startup companies, even, you know, if they're small. You kind of have to also ask the, you know, the business questions. And same with investors. Anyone that's going to put money in there, they need to do their proper due diligence. I mean, there was, like, some of these guys actually told me they didn't do any due diligence. If they invested because someone else invested, which is kind of terrible. I mean, and I think that the crux of why, if there was a venture capital company that put money into Springleaf, which there wasn't, venture capital companies actually do proper due diligence. It was all just guys, angel investors. That's just someone who's like the rich uncle or whatever. He's got some money, he's put it, few companies, they're often based in another area. They just meet you on a warm handshake. They just meet you and they go, okay, cool, I like you. But that's what the problem was. This guy was very likable, but he was conning them. So you've got to be careful. You've got to be very, don't invest on the person just being nice and, who the person is. You got to go around the back and see what's actually happening and are they actually developing a product? Because they often go, oh, it's coming out there and, oh, it's delayed for this reason or we need more money. And this whole thing of delaying and whatever, they're getting more and more money in. And by the time they say, oh, we don't have a product, they've run away. So you have to be vigilant, I suppose.
And then lastly, where is Aaron now? That's the first thing. And then secondly, how's been the, what do you call this? How's been the reception to the book?
Oh, okay. No, the book has been very well received. We've had a lot of media around it. It's a fresh kind of, there hasn't been another book like this that's looked at this other side of the tech sector. So I think anyone in business or anyone curious about the tech sector, it's a great read. It's kind of like a thriller as well. It's, how did this guy do it? And it takes you through the whole steps. I heard about it 2 weeks ago that Iran, from someone that knows someone else, that knows him, that he could be in South Africa or he visited South Africa at least, because he was deported from the US last year in May to Israel. And then he jumped over to the UK in June to visit his girlfriend at the time. I'm not sure if they're still together, but he could be in South Africa again. And in which case, I mean, he's likely to surface again. And these kind of people that pull off frauds, scams and things, I mean, that's the only thing that they really know. Do they? Is he gonna do something legitimate? Other than sell pencils or something like that. I mean, you'd have to really move totally away from the tech sector because someone will, find him and send that an email or phone call, make a phone call to whoever's running that business, say, look here, be careful, and here's this book. Here's look what he's done. So and there are investors that are in South Africa that are after him as well for that probably want to sue him. I don't know how long he can, after a certain time, you probably can't, I don't know if you, there's a certain time when you wait and then it's too much in the past that you can't see the person who takes the ball claims against him again.
All right. So that was us. We're with Stephen Tim, who is author of an interesting book called At Any Cost, giving us some insight into a fraud saga, the featuring South African tech entrepreneur Aaron Ayle, giving us also insight into the two businesses. One was called Spring Leap and the other one was called Shopin, and how all of this happened in the United States. He had dreams of going to New York and found ways of getting money out. So we were just having that discussion around, some of the factors that went into the actual fraud. And we have Stephen just highlighting a couple of things to say that, sometimes the misrepresentations that are happening in the tech sector are something that need to really be spoken about. That's the first thing. Second thing is he's saying there's a lot of lying that actually happens behind the scenes. And at the same time, they needs to be a little bit more when it comes to due diligence outside of the venture capital space, where due diligence is part of the process, especially with media players and also on the side of angel investors, very easy to hoodwink people. And then he's also just highlighting the fact that Aaron has been reported to may have been in South Africa recently, but also just warning that if people aren't careful, these are the types of characters that may resurface with another scam. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mudiwa.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Fascinating discussion with Stephen, and I think, you know, it highlights a couple of things. And, you know, as much as we talk about technology and we're geeks and we enjoy the business models, the Apples, the Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons, etc., I think it is good to highlight the fact that behind the scenes there are a lot of nefarious characters and ill intent that are actually happening. And I think more than anything else, one always needs to be aware and ask questions, you know, just around what's actually going on in the business. As I highlighted during the conversation, it's one of the big gripes that I have where tech businesses, whether large or small, obviously in this particular case we're dealing in the startup sector, but where technology businesses in particular, large and small, don't want to disclose or talk about their business because they sort of understand that, you know, numbers actually show you the real situation on the ground. It's no longer a, you know, something that is, you know, up to your own judgment or something that, you know, that you think is up to interpretation. If you're making X amount, let's say you're making 500,000 rand in revenue per month, then you're making 500,000 rand per revenue or, you know, per month. It's not subjective. It's not about how you feel. It's not about, you know, this is fair or unfair. This is what's actually going on the ground. So I think we do need to normalize having more and more of those discussions and asking those questions so that we actually understand what's going on the business front. Now, but at the same time, I do recognize the fact that there are a couple of, you know, holes in the system. And like what Stephen was talking about, the fact that someone like Aaron was able to do what he did means he was able to recognize, you know, some of the flaws that are in this tech space where you have startups trying to raise funding from angel investors and all the different funding routes and channels that are available to them. So the fact that he was able to game the system also shows the fact that the system is gameable, right? Which sort of speaks to some of the things that do need to be fixed when it comes to the tech space. So hopefully the more that we have, you know, these discussions, it can lend itself to improving the system. And also at the same time, this culture around people trying to raise funds, everyone is trying to exit, everyone is trying to have a large IPO, everyone is trying to have a big buyout in the currency space, people are trying to have ICOs. Whatever we're talking about, we do need to go and interrogate the business models that are behind, you know, all of these things. Ask a simple question. How do you make $1? How do you make 1 rand? And then just see where the conversation goes beyond that. But otherwise, you know, technology is an enabler for a digital future. This is the way of life now. And almost every company is dealing with technology in one form or another. So if we can put better systems, you know, behind all of these things, then it will be ultimately for the good of the economy. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiyo Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.